Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. Pharmaceutical companies are getting ready to ship COVID-19 vaccines to the public. It's welcome news for many people with the continued health threat from the coronavirus. Healthcare officials are planning mass inoculation, and it could be weeks or maybe months before it reaches the general public. Coming up after the news, we'll get some answers on what we know and don't know about distributing the vaccine and what obstacles might be in the way. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Native women's advocates in New Mexico are calling for more resources to address missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls in the state. The task force made up of advocates, state officials, law enforcement, and community members was established in 2019 to examine the issue. The task force released its final report and recommendations to New Mexico's governor Wednesday. Project assistant of the group, Christine Mean, says there are many challenges.
One of the big issues that we have been able to highlight in the report is the need for resources, training and support services with murder investigations. Data from the U.S. Attorney's Office, which are federal investigations, has found and shows that the largest reasons for declining a case is due to insufficient evidence. Investigations are just not happening in ways that support the prosecution of offenders. There is a high need of resources for support and prevention services, such as shelters, safe homes, long and short-term housing opportunities for families who are experiencing violence and just need a place to go.
Mean says there's also a need for improvement in the reporting of murder investigations in tribal communities and border towns. Many members of the task force have been personally impacted, including Means, whose sister was murdered in 2015. Members of the task force say the report helps draw awareness and spark conversations on missing and murdered Indigenous people.
One of the biggest impacts that we can solve with no money, no resources, is just from our hearts. And that is advocating, that is pushing, that is educating, and doing more outreach on behalf of this issue for everybody all across the board, and in particular because we know the numbers are so staggering in Native communities, MMIWR.
The 64-page report can be found online at the State of New Mexico's Indian Affairs website. Penobscot Chief and President of United South and Eastern Tribes Kirk Francis is calling on the federal government to fulfill its promises to tribes and for Congress to help make systematic change. Francis called for an overhaul of federal trust responsibilities Wednesday, testifying before the U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs at a hearing on advancing tribal self-governance. Francis says the pandemic has exposed many areas of federal neglect currently impacting tribes. He says it's time to fix land claims to give full criminal jurisdiction of land and people on them to tribes, fix tax codes for economic development, restore tribal homelands, and fully fund federal programs.
The government should commit to assisting in the rebuilding of tribal nations, as our current circumstances are directly attributable and tied to U.S. policies. With the new year on the horizon, and as we look toward recovery from COVID-19, USAC calls upon Congress, the administration, and the whole federal government to join us in working toward a legacy of change for tribal nations.
The protection of sacred sites and Native American voting rights were also discussed. And throughout the hearing, as senators on the Indian Affairs Committee closed out their final meeting for the year, they recognized retiring New Mexico Senator Tom Udall, vice chair of the committee. Tribal leaders and senators thanked him for years-long work on Indian country issues. U.S. public health expert Dr. Anthony Fauci is scheduled to talk with leaders of two South Dakota tribes next week, according to Indians.com. Fauci will take part in a virtual discussion on COVID-19 with the Oglala and Cheyenne River Sioux tribes. The tribes have been hit by COVID-19 and have issued a number of emergency orders, including reservation checkpoints and lockdowns. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by AARP. AARP creates and connects people to unique tools and programs, helps conserve personal resources, and tackles issues that matter most to individuals, families, and communities. More at aarp.org.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the SAMHSA-sponsored Opioid Response Network, working across the nation to address the opioid crisis in tribal communities. Information and support at aaip.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, joining you live from my homelands of Shirwikdoi via Skype. It seems like COVID-19 vaccine can't come fast enough as infection numbers spiral out of control in many states across the country. And tribes are reinstating stay-at-home orders and curfews in order to keep their citizens safe. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration's Vaccine Committee has a meeting scheduled today as a part of the process to authorize Pfizer's vaccine for distribution to the public. If all goes as planned, inoculation could start as early as next week for some people. It's a huge undertaking, and healthcare facilities are tasked with planning and prioritizing the people who need it most. The Indian Health Service started their plans months ago. Coming up this hour, we'll hear from members of the IHS Vaccine Task Force group about the plans. And we'd also like to hear your thoughts and questions about the vaccine. Join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And joining us today from Fort Totten, North Dakota, is Chairman Douglas Yankton Sr. from the Spirit Lake Tribe. Our pleasure to have him here. Chairman Yankton, welcome to Native America Calling.
Oh, good afternoon. Thank you. It's an honor to be present and be able to be heard on your show today in regards to some of the concerns.
Indeed. And Chairman Yankton, how soon will your nation receive the vaccine? What kind of talks are happening?
Well, from the latest talks that we've been having with the North Dakota State Health Department, it could be as early as in about 14 days.
And by what means are you at this point?
So at the point that we're at right now, should the state get dispersed a certain number of vaccination doses, be it the Pfizer or one of the other ones that are currently under the study to see if it's going to be if there's going to be one of the other two that are going to work to combat this disease, this pandemic, the virus. So when the state gets distributed a certain amount, our tribe will get a portion of that amount. And part of the discussion is that portion for on the reservation will go towards all essential health staff, medical, tribal health, EMS, all of that essential working staff will have the options to, if they want to be in line for the shot, that's who we're going to target first.
And so from your understanding of how this will be helping your community, what are your thoughts? The vaccine is here. You said possibly 14 days things could start. What are your thoughts now?
Well, my immediate thoughts as the tribal leader is, you know, the concerns, I guess, my concerns are the concerns that all the people have in regards to, you know, the success rate, the effects that it may have, right now people with allergies, they're saying maybe it's not going to be a good idea to take it, but we have, you know, hundreds of questions that we have not had answers to yet, you know, in regards to, for example, those that have already been positive here on the reservation. Should it be a need for them to take the vaccination if, you know, and get sick again if that's one of the side effects? You know, so there's all these underlying unanswered questions that we have. And I do believe I'm scheduled for a call on Monday with Dr. Fauci to hopefully get some of these questions answered. You know, and it the vaccine will be available, but our people, including myself, are a little skeptical on whether we're going to take it or not, you know. So a lot of concerns. You have your pros and you have your cons, and that's the same way with the majority of the people. Some are going to take it. They'll even volunteer, they say, and some will say, well, I'll just wait to see how that group turns out.
Yeah. And so, Chairman, with the distribution, you know, people are still deciding, how does that work? Will a percentage go to the tribe, and from there the tribe has control over how long they have these vaccines? Anything you can tell me on that side?
Well, that's the other part. On our end, we have to have a plan in place. So if we have a certain number of essential workers that say they're going to take it, and then all of a sudden they back out and say, well, having second thoughts, I'm not going to take it. What's our plan to find somebody to take that shot that we had planned for, because we're only going to get so much at a certain amount of time, you know? And so we have to have a backup plan to that plan, because the vaccination only lasts for so long and then it spoils, you know? So we're working on, we have different COVID-19 teams, having daily, weekly meetings here for the last 3 weeks, trying to get this plan all in place when it's our turn at Spirit Lake to be distributed a certain amount of vaccines at that certain specific time, you know. So we have to be well prepared. We have we're doing immunization training for the immunizers. We have a immunization shot place that we will utilize specifically for that purpose, along with our clinical facility. So we'll have various sites in place. If we get 300 vaccinations, and that 300's got to be done in a certain amount of hours, then hopefully we're preparing on that end, you know, to distribute the shots for those who wish to take them.
And Chairman Yankton, so far, what have you been told by the government?
You know, as far as what we have been told, I think, is what everybody else is being told throughout the world. You know, it's, you know, different side effects for different people. You know, the concerns in regards to, if I take the shot, and the Pfizer shot is a series of two, from what I understand, it may not work on all people. You still may get the virus. There's still that chance. You know, so I think they're trying to be as transparent as much as possible. And then now it's up to us as tribal leaders to be just as transparent to all of the members of our tribe.
And so for you, what lingering questions do you still have that hopefully Dr. Fauci will be able to answer?
I think, you know, the most concern for me is the side effects. You know, we have a lot of vulnerable people here. We have a lot of elderly age people. So could one of those side effects be a contributing factor into possibly, you know, affecting them to where they may not survive it? Like I said, you know, so we have that criteria as to who we would like for that certain person to take it, but there again, it's up to them. We always look out for our elderly, and we always look out for our children that are, you know, under a certain age. But if it's like a 95% rate, and you know, they take the shot, and they should be that small percent that may be affected, you know, one way or another. That's kind of the main concern for us, you know, as the Spirit Lake people and the Spirit Lake leaders, is we've had a number of deaths already, and we just don't, you know, I don't know how many more we can handle. It's been a sad 7-8 months for us here. You know, we've lost a lot of people to the virus that you would have thought would be around a little longer. But unfortunately, they're gone now. And, you know, we just don't need to have those numbers increase by not knowing if the vaccine is going to work or how it's going to affect people who take it.
Sure. And when we do lose a loved one, it weighs very heavy on the entire community. And Chairman Yankton, I know you got to get going here. Less than a minute. Any final thoughts?
No, you know, I just, you know, everybody out there, you know, just encourage to, you know, stay safe, do what you can to keep yourself free from the virus, and also, you know, always be mindful of others and how you can try to keep them safe, and, you know, wish the best for everybody. And, you know, the holiday seasons are coming about us here now, and, you know, just try to be encouraging to one another, and it's going to be a different way to celebrate, but it's something that we're going to have to do to stay safe.
Well, I appreciate you being here, Chairman Douglas Yankton, Sr. of the Spirit Lake Nation. Thanks for joining us today. And that's one tribal leader's take on all this. We'll hear from people who are working on the task force to bring the vaccine to tribal communities. And at this point, did you think this time would ever come when a vaccine would be made available? We're hearing plans that tribes have, and also plans from the Indian Health Service on how things will be distributed. If you have any questions, any thoughts, give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We look forward to your calls and your concerns too. Anything you want to share, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Go ahead and dial in now.
Voters in a handful of states decided to legalize medical or recreational marijuana in November. And the U.S. House of Representatives recently voted to legalize it on a federal level. We'll look at what opportunities and pitfalls tribes face in the challenging marijuana landscape. That's on the next Native America Calling.
Support by Roswell Park, who know tribal communities face persistent challenges in health equity, such as cancer and higher death rates. The Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center is dedicated to advancing cancer research that will lead to translatable science, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations worldwide. Are you at high risk for cancer? A no-charge online assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and we are talking about COVID-19 vaccine distribution today. Is your Native community planning for a mass vaccine distribution? Join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And we're going to go ahead and go up to Toyac, Colorado. We have Dr. Matthew Clark. He is the chair of the Indian Health Service National Pharmacy and Therapeutics Committee, and he's also team lead for the safety and monitoring team of the COVID-19 Vaccine Task Force. Our pleasure to have him here. Dr. Clark, welcome.
Thank you, Ms. Gatewood. Happy to be with you today.
Thanks. Also here, too, from Bemidji, Minnesota, is Dr. Kay Lee Fretlin, and she is the Indian Health Service COVID-19 Vaccine Task Force Deputy Lead, and she is a direct descendant of the White Earth Band of Ojibwe. Our pleasure to have her here. Dr. Fretlin, welcome.
Bonjour, Tara. Miigwech for having me.
Thanks for being on. And one more guest is joining us out of Elk Point, South Dakota. We have Dr. Megan O'Connell. She is a medical epidemiologist for the CDC Foundation. That's the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And she is working with the Great Plains Tribal Leaders Health Board. And she is an enrolled member of the Cherokee Nation. Dr. O'Connell, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
And so we just heard from one of our tribal leaders about the vaccine, and I think just educating a little bit about it, how it works. And so, Dr. Clark, I'm going to turn to you to just kind of explain a little bit about what it means when we say a vaccine will be made available as early as, you know, we're getting close to a point where people are going to be able to access it in our tribal nations. What exactly do we mean when we say the vaccine?
So, Ms. Gatewood, thank you for the question. As you referenced earlier, the FDA's vaccine and related biological products advisory committee is meeting today to review the first COVID-19 vaccine to have completed an interim analysis. That vaccine is produced by the manufacturer Pfizer in collaboration with BioNTech. And the vaccine is built on a what's called a platform of messenger RNA. That vaccine data was released publicly earlier this week on Tuesday. And all of the information that the FDA committee is reviewing today is available for public review. But as you heard Chairman Yankton mention, the initial analysis indicates that the vaccine is 95% effective at preventing infection from coronavirus when compared with the placebo group. It's also been found to be effective in preventing severe infection.
And so exactly how does it work, Dr. Clark?
So the way the Pfizer-BioNTech mRNA vaccine works is messenger RNA is essentially a message packaged in an envelope that when injected into a muscle, the message gets into the muscle cell and utilizes the cell's ability to produce proteins. In this particular case, the messenger RNA has been designed to enable the cell to produce a protein called the spike protein on the coronavirus. The cell produces that protein as a way of training the body to recognize the virus if the individual is exposed to the virus later. And the way that it does that is the protein causes an immune response, specifically antibodies and immune cells learn to recognize that protein so that in the future, if the individual gets exposed to infection, there will already be the ability for the immune system to both recognize and to eliminate the virus.
And so it's different than a flu vaccine, correct? And tell me how.
It is different. So there are two general types of vaccines. So those are what are known as protein-based or gene-based vaccines. The flu vaccine is a protein-based vaccine, and specifically the injectable version of the seasonal flu vaccine is what's known as a split virus vaccine. So essentially the production of a seasonal flu vaccine involves growing the virus and then killing the virus and then splitting it into little pieces and then injecting that to produce an immune response. Whereas the Pfizer-BioNTech mRNA vaccine is a gene-based vaccine. And as I mentioned earlier, it's designed to basically use the body's own ability to create proteins. In this case, the protein is the spike protein from the coronavirus, and in turn, you know, make those proteins available to the immune system so that it can both recognize and eliminate the virus if a future exposure occurs.
And so with this vaccine about to be administered in our tribal nations, how does it work? Do you go once, you get a shot, you're done, or do you have to return? Tell me a little bit about that process too, Dr. Clark.
Sure. So the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine is a two-dose vaccine. In fact, each of the six major vaccines that are currently in clinical trials that have been supported by the federal government are all designed around a two-dose series. And so the basic logistics of getting vaccinated is an individual would receive their initial injection, and then in the case of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, they would return 21 days later for the second dose. The analysis, the interim analysis that was performed that is being reviewed today by the FDA indicates that the 95% effectiveness is related to that two-dose series within 7 days of the second dose.
And so I know there's a lot of concerns about side effects, and I do want to remind folks that if you'd like to join us today, you can give us a call. We are learning about the vaccine. If you have questions yourself, go ahead and call in. By no means is today's program an endorsement for the vaccine, but anytime we have medical conversations, we always encourage you to talk with your own healthcare providers and have discussions with those in your circle about things. You can do that with us today, too, by calling in 1-800-996-2848. And Dr. Clark, the concerns about side effects, what is known?
So what is known is that from both phase one and two clinical trials that are already in publication and have been for several months, those are mostly safety-based clinical trials. And now also from the interim analysis of the phase three clinical trials that involved over 40,000 volunteers, the side effect profile for this particular vaccine is very similar to the side effect profile for most other vaccines that are currently licensed for use. And specifically, the common vaccine side effects such as arm pain, fatigue, headache are the ones that are seen most commonly with this vaccine, just as they are with other vaccines. That said, those types of side effects are not terribly common and occur in about 10 to 15% of the vaccine recipients. The other type of adverse effect that we watch for is what's known as serious adverse effects. And based on 2 months of the interim analysis, there were no serious adverse effects related to the vaccine during the phase three clinical trial of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. Now, of course, there will be systems in place to continue to monitor for the potential for serious adverse effects. You may have heard in the news just yesterday that the United Kingdom, which has already begun immunizing frontline healthcare workers, reported two episodes of anaphylaxis-like reactions from the vaccine among individuals who already had a prior history of those types of severe allergic reactions. And so that's an example of how, you know, monitoring for serious adverse effects will continue and certainly will inform decision-making about who it is safe to receive the vaccine.
Well, thank you for that. Dr. Matthew Clark is here with us. He is the chair of the Indian Health Service National Pharmacy and Therapeutics Committee, also team lead for the safety and monitoring team of the COVID-19 Vaccine Task Force. Any questions, any thoughts, give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Also here, too, is Dr. Kaylee Fretlin. And Dr. Fretlin, wanted to give you a moment if there's anything else you want to pick up on understanding the vaccine and the plans on how it'll be distributed across Native America through the Indian Health Service.
Absolutely, Tara. I can certainly talk about how it's going to be distributed. So Indian Health Service is being considered a jurisdiction similar to states. So all the states, as well as a few cities, are considered jurisdictions by the CDC. So IHS, along with four other federal programs, are being considered jurisdictions, which means we will receive an allocation of vaccine. So whichever vaccines are available, the U.S. government is allocating those to all jurisdictions on a pro rata or population-based allocation. So it's a pretty equitable distribution amongst jurisdictions in that regard. Whichever vaccine gets the EUA, so if Pfizer receives the EUA today or tomorrow and Moderna next week, those will be the vaccines that we'll initially get. What IHS has been doing is we have been working with our federal, tribal, urban partners, as well as the CDC and Operation Warp Speed, to develop and work on a plan for distribution and implementation of the COVID vaccine when it is available. So we've reached out to we've been coordinating and working with our 12 area offices and coming up with distribution strategies and reaching out to their federal, tribal, and urban facilities within their geographical areas to determine the best strategies to distribute vaccine. And what we've done is we've worked out with our ITU partners, or our federal, tribal, and urban partners, we've asked them to determine what their population that they anticipate vaccinating is going to be. And we broke those into populations, priority populations, based on early guidance from CDC. And those, as mentioned earlier on the call, are our healthcare personnel, our essential workers, which could include law enforcement, food industry, teachers, government employees or tribal government employees. And really that's for the tribe to determine who they feel is essential outside the healthcare personnel, as well as residents in long-term care, which we now know are part of the first phase 1A priority population as determined by the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. And then elders, and we left elders as an open category, not an age-defined elder, knowing that many of our tribal communities, and there isn't an age for an elder. And so we each have different definitions or who we consider elders in our community. And we wanted our tribal communities to make sure that they could define that number for their community, as well as patients who have chronic diseases that would lead to a higher risk of COVID illness, and then the overall population of how many people each community thinks they're going to vaccinate. And we really wanted to make sure that that included both beneficiaries and non-beneficiaries, recognizing that many of our rural tribal health programs and federal health programs reach maybe the only health facility within that community and serve both beneficiaries and non-beneficiaries. So once we were able to get those population estimates, we worked with our areas as well as Operation Warp Speed and CDC to really make sure that we had reached everyone. And so with the CDC partners, it was really important that all tribes had been contacted and selected a jurisdiction, whether it was through their state. As you heard earlier, Fort Totten is going with North Dakota for their allocation and their coordination of vaccine, or if they were going to partner with IHS and coordinate vaccine distribution through the Indian Health Service. So in the end, what we have is 337 federal, tribal, and urban healthcare facilities that are working with the Indian Health Service for the coordination of their vaccine. And so as we look to the distribution, so we've already started putting in those orders. So our pre-order for Pfizer went in last week. So we're anticipating an early delivery next week and Monday and Tuesday. And what we're going to do is that early delivery of Pfizer is going to go to 19 different sites within the Indian Health Service. And from there, it's going to be redistributed to 207 healthcare facilities. So we're going to reach about 67% of our healthcare facilities with this first allocation of Pfizer distribution. And this has really worked with the areas, knowing that they understand the geographical considerations as well as the populational considerations within their areas. So we worked closely with them, who in turn worked with their federal, tribal, and urban partners. And then for Moderna, we do anticipate putting in our orders for Moderna this week, and then the distribution to happen likely the week of Christmas, so early like that December 22nd week. And that should reach, we should actually reach almost all of our facilities with the Moderna allocation. So between Pfizer and Moderna, we really feel like we're going to reach over 100% of our phase one population, which is healthcare personnel as well as residents in long-term care.
And so, Dr. Fritlin, when we think of this and the role that tribes are able to partake in, often, you know, we hear about healthcare in our communities being compromised because of funding or not enough resources. And it sounds like in this case, tribes are being considered. How do we get to that point? Got less than a minute.
How do we get to the point of being considered a jurisdiction or being considered a the consideration for vaccines?
I think being right there as it's coming out, often we're left behind.
That is a great question. So we had the opportunity to partner with CDC early on in August, and we went to five different states, and we talked to the states, Operation Warp Speed and CDC, and we really reflected on, we went back and reflected on what happened with H1N1. And so we looked at what happened during that time and that the tribes were often not prioritized. And we want to make sure that that did not happen with COVID. And so we requested, and we had several of our partners request that IHS be considered a jurisdiction so we could ensure that our tribal communities were prioritized with COVID vaccine.
All right. Thank you for that. We'll pick up the discussion here. We know you want to jump into it, too. Dial now. Now's your time to share your thoughts, ask your questions. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And we'll continue to learn about how all of this is rolling out. Tribal leaders, if you're in the audience too, have a thought on this, dial now 1-800-99-NATIVE.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the SAMHSA-sponsored Opioid Response Network, working with tribal communities across the nation to address the opioid crisis. Breaking the cycle starts with preventing opioid misuse, treating opioid use disorder with medications and counseling, and recovery support during all phases of recovery. If you or a loved one is challenged by opioid use disorder, you can find additional information at aaip.org.
Thanks for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and we are focused on the COVID-19 vaccine. There's one on the horizon, and health officials are working on plans to vaccinate the public. Do you have questions about how the vaccine is rolling out in your own Native community? There is still time to join our conversation. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And with us today on the line is Dr. Megan O'Connell, and she is working with the Great Plains Tribal Leaders Health Board. She's an enrolled member of the Cherokee Nation, and she is also a medical epidemiologist for the CDC Foundation. Here too, out of Bemidji, Minnesota, is Dr. Kaylee Fritlin, and she is the acting chief pharmacist at the Red Lake Hospital in Minnesota, and she is also the deputy lead for the IHS COVID-19 Vaccine Task Force. And also here too is Dr. Matthew Clark, who is the chair of the IHS National Pharmacy and Therapeutics Committee. And he is also a part of the COVID-19 Vaccine Task Force team. Thank you all for being here. And I want to go ahead and take a caller. We have Melvin, who is joining us today out of Santee, Nebraska, tuned in on KZYK. Melvin, thanks for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Well, it's great to hear this show because of the concern over the virus and how this antidote is going to get to us. The biggest concern I had was most of our Indian reservation facilities don't have those super freezers for this first round of this Pfizer vaccine, as you know, most of our Indian health services are understaffed and underfunded. Are we going to have enough masks, gloves, those plastic suits they wear? Is all that stuff going to come with this vaccine so that our health people are covered too? You know, they've been going at it for 10 months, and You know, I'm so thankful that a vaccine is here now, but where are we going to store these super, you know, for the super cold?
Sure. And you know what? Great question, Melvin and Dr. Fretlin. Anything you can tell Melvin?
Absolutely. Thank you, sir, for that question. And I, like you, commend our healthcare, our frontline healthcare workers and our healthcare workers who have been really managing the fight in our healthcare facilities and helping keep our families and our communities safe. So what is going to come in the vaccine? You asked a really good question, because Pfizer is stored at an ultra low temp, which is 60 to 80 below degrees Celsius, below zero. And so in Indian Health Service, we do actually have 27 ultra cool freezers, and we have about 30 more that different tribes and NSSC have ordered that we're anticipating in January, February. And those are really going to be scattered geographically throughout all of our areas. But for the Pfizer vaccine, in this early limited allocation, we are looking at sites that do have the ultra-low temp freezer for right now. But it can actually be stored in the shipping container that it comes in and then recharged with dry ice. Although you are right, it's a big box and does take up quite a bit of space in addition to storing the dry ice. But that is a possibility, and they've just recently announced that they've extended that storage capacity up to 30 days in that shipping container and then 5 days in the fridge. So with appropriate handling, it can actually be stored in that. And we're hoping that most of our communities, especially with limited allocation, our goal is that we get through this vaccine on a pretty fast pace, that we get as many patients in as we can, as quickly as we can, so that we can continue to get allocation of vaccine. We really, and I think Operation Warp Speed also doesn't want us sitting on a lot of vaccine if we can get it. We want to get people vaccinated. We don't want to be holding and storing a whole lot of vaccine. You asked a really good question on the PPE, the personal protective equipment. So what's going to come with the vaccine, and we're excited to hear that a lot of our sites that are anticipating Pfizer vaccine next week have already started to receive what are called ancillary kits. And the ancillary kits are going to include face masks, face shields. They're going to have the syringes, the needles, the alcohol swabs, some vaccine cards already included in them. Some of the PPE that's not included, so there's no gloves included. So that is going to be an additional item that sites need to have on hand, are those gloves, so that they can wear that when they're vaccinating. When it comes to gowns, and because you had mentioned the gowns and kind of the full getup, the full PPE when we give that, when we see a lot of our patients right now, for the most part, each facility has kind of its own procedures and policies in place as to whether gowns need to be worn. And then N95 masks, but face shields, the surgical masks, and the gloves would generally be sufficient for vaccine administration in most of our environments that we're giving vaccine to. So we do feel like the ancillary supplies, they're going to match the amount of vaccine that we receive. So if we order 100 doses, we're going to get 100 supplies to meet those 100 doses with that. And so as we're looking at our redistribution with our hub and spokes, with our areas, as they give sites vaccine and they redistribute vaccine, those ancillary supplies will go with it so that they've got the supplies they need to do the vaccination. I hope that answers your question,
Melvin.
Sir.
Mm-hmm. Melvin, thank you very much for giving us a ring. And Dr. O'Connell, I know we've covered a lot of ground. If there's still more to just explain things or even explain the process of how the Indian Health Service is going to be distributing the vaccine, or even just hurdles that have been overcome to get to this point, please share. Go ahead, Dr. O'Connell.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate listening. I've been studying vaccines a lot, along with everyone else, and even I'm learning new things on this call. I learn new things every time I hear about it, so thank you. I would just like to, you know, second and third what everyone has been saying, that the vaccine development process has been going very quickly, but has been following standard safety procedures. There's been no steps skipped in the process. And whenever we develop a vaccine within the United States, we really focus on making sure that it's safe and effective. And that's no different for the coronavirus vaccines, even though the process has been sped up.
And so, you know, I got a lot of callers with questions, so let's go ahead and bring them in too. We're going to go to Linda, who is in Warm Springs, Oregon, tuned in on KWSO. Linda, thank you for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Well, good morning, and thank you for having me. I just wanted to ask if this inoculation would help me. I am a liver transplant, and I'm on suppressants. And I heard the doctor earlier say that this activates, this new vaccine activates the system, and I didn't know whether it's safe to have it or not.
Okay. Linda, thanks for asking. Dr. Fretlin, anything for our caller?
Hi, Tara. I'm actually going to refer to Dr. Clark on this question. Thank you.
Okay. No problem. Dr. Clark?
Sure. Yeah, I appreciate the question. Thank you, ma'am. I think you raise an important concern, which is that there are individuals who have specific pre-existing health conditions and specific health needs that should be taken into consideration when trying to make a decision about this vaccine. And what I would recommend is that you have an honest and early conversation with your primary health care provider to determine if this vaccine is right for you.
All right. Thank you for that. And let's see, we have another caller. We have Shirley in Pine Ridge, South Dakota, tuned in on KILI. Shirley, thanks for reaching out. Go ahead. You're on air.
Okay. The last time I got a flu vaccine, I developed Guillain-Barré syndrome. And I'm just wondering if I could get the COVID vaccine.
Okay. Dr. Clark?
Also a good question. Thank you. So the relationship between seasonal influenza vaccine and Guillain-Barré syndrome is one that is known, and individuals who've had that association obviously are recommended not to receive a subsequent seasonal influenza vaccine. That said, there is no known association between the current Pfizer-BioNTech COVID vaccine and Guillain-Barré syndrome. However, as with the previous caller, given the unique nature of your health situation, I would also recommend that you consult with your primary care physician in trying to make an individual decision about the appropriateness of the vaccines for your situation.
All right. And then here is another question that did come in from a caller who wanted to know, for those who are exposed or have experienced symptoms and recovered, do they need the vaccine? I'm not sure who to toss that to, either Dr. Clark, Dr. Fretlin. Just go ahead and take it.
Yeah, I'm happy to take that one as well. So there has been some discussion about the potential usefulness of a COVID vaccine among those who have previously been infected. So to begin with, it's not known the duration of immunity following infection. And so for that reason, it is likely that individuals who've had a previous infection will benefit from immunization according to their risk category. In other words, you know, as the vaccine is rolled out into different priority groups, you know, according to the risk category, even if you've been previously infected, it's likely that you would benefit from the vaccine. And I anticipate that that particular issue will likely be addressed in an emergency use authorization from the FDA, not only for the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, but for future vaccines as well.
Okay. And we got another question that came in. A caller wanted to know if there is any testing being set up to see if people already have antibodies. Dr. Clark, any knowledge on that?
So antibody testing is certainly something that has been in development and is available, though not widely available. That said, it's fraught because it's, as I had mentioned earlier, it's unknown, even if you've had a previous infection, which would produce antibodies, it's unknown, you know, how long you remain immune to reinfection. We do know that there are some documented cases of reinfection. It's estimated that it's up to 6 months after an infection that your antibodies protect you, and possibly longer. But the other problem is that, antibody testing sometimes, as with other lab testing, can be subject to false positive results. And in particular, coronaviruses as a family of viruses in general are common in the human population. And because of that fact, the what we call the specificity of an antibody test may be limited somewhat by antibodies to other types of coronaviruses. So certainly there's ongoing research looking at the potential value of antibody testing, but it's not quite ready for routine use.
All right, thank you for that. And callers and people who've been calling in, really appreciate all your questions today. And Dr. O'Connell, I know you're working with the Great Plains Tribal Leaders Health Board. Anything you can share about helping tribal leaders understand more or even be a part of this process? Anything you want to share on that?
Sure. We're doing a number of activities to try to help prepare tribal communities and tribal leaders for the implementation of the coronavirus vaccine. So one of our main efforts involves education, which is doing things like this, educating the public, answering questions about the coronavirus, responding to concerns. We've developed infographics and educational materials that the tribal communities can use, and have regular conversations with our tribal leaders about COVID and including the coronavirus vaccine. So we really work to try to support them in their efforts to understand the vaccine and the development so that they can make the best decisions for their communities.
And anything you can share about getting the vaccine to the tribal communities, especially in rural areas, with, just understanding the sensitivity of the different vaccines and how they need to be stored. And sometimes, even getting to some of these rural places can be a challenge, especially during the winter months. Is there anything you can share about the challenges of transporting the virus to our communities or the vaccine?
Sure. I think it sounds like Dr. Fretland might be able to also comment on this, but there are challenges, particularly with the Pfizer vaccine, because it does need to be stored in such a cold temperature. But they have developed special coolers that they can be transported in and stored safely for up to 30 days. And IHS and the states are working to get those out. That said, this cold storage is only related to the Pfizer vaccine. The Moderna vaccine can be stored in temperatures that are a little bit easier for people to achieve. And that vaccine will be reviewed very soon as well. So there's multiple vaccines coming, and I think using the different vaccines to reach different areas will be necessary so that everyone can receive access to the vaccines.
All right, thank you for that. And Dr. Fretland, any final comments? Less than a minute.
Hi, I just want to echo what Dr. O'Connell said. She's absolutely right. With the Moderna vaccine, if that receives its EUA approval, that storage condition at regular freezer temperatures of minus 20 to minus 30 degrees Celsius makes it a lot easier for storage for almost every one of our facilities and most pharmacies and facilities within the U.S. The other nice thing with Moderna is it does come in minimum quantities of 100, whereas Pfizer is in minimum quantities of 975. Just adding for some logistical challenges, but we know in Indian country, our areas are more than willing to work with our ITUs to get the vaccine and have the broadest reach we can, just ensuring that everyone has access to the vaccine within these first 2 weeks so we can get as many of our healthcare personnel and phase 1A population vaccinated as possible.
Okay. Well, if you still have questions, you can always reach out, comments@nativeamericacalling.com. And that is going to wrap up our hour today. Thank you to Dr. Megan O'Connell, Dr. Matthew Clark, Dr. Kaylee Fretland, and also Chairman Douglas Yankton Sr. We hope you'll join us again tomorrow as we talk about the changing marijuana laws and what it means for our Native nations. I'm Tara Gatewood. Thank you for tuning in today. We'll meet you here tomorrow.
Keshe, it's holidays deep the hot now and this time at the Yam Tony and the Kina Awa medical history yaya sabto. Ooh, so not ketonium all medical care to the and elekinawa. Asna Dai and the Ganyana to the Miss Aqua most hours of the Eastern Healthcare.gov in our and Dai Eastern 1-800-318-2596 and Bidan Akadapto. Look at Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services don't know Bidan Italo Kedawe. Ella, qua.
Support by Amerind, Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Amerind works with tribal governments and their business enterprises to provide effective commercial insurance coverage, strengthen Native American communities, protect tribal sovereignty, and help keep dollars in Indian Country. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto solutions at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.